The views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the sponsor, Gross & Schuster.
News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Welcome back to Pep Talk. I'm your host, PJ, filling in once again for Meg. On the phone line with me right now is attorney Terrence Gross from Gross & Schuster. And we'll be talking to him about personal injury. And how you doing, sir?
Doing well. Glad to be back. And it's always a pleasure. And I treat this program as a PSA. It's what are my thoughts, but really just to share information with the public that they may not know. I've been a lawyer for 46 years. Our principal office has always been Pensacola, although we now have five locations in Milton, Crestview, Fort Walton, Navarre, and of course, Pensacola. Oh, wow. I'm in practice with my three sons, and all we do is personal injury on a contingency fee basis. You get nothing, we get nothing, like any other personal injury law firm would do. So what I want to talk about today, and you could call with a question or you could text us with a question, I'll try to answer it, but I want to talk to you about esoteric statutes that have come into play, usually at the request of insurance companies, that have limited the regular person's opportunity to seek just compensation if they've been injured due to the negligence of another. And I became a lawyer in 1979. In 1981, a statute was passed to limit or decrease jury awards. And it seemed pretty innocuous at the time, but I think since then, I have seen the far-reaching implications. Lawyers call this statute the non-joinder statute. What does that mean? It means before 1981, if I had a case and I'm representing Joe Bob against John Smith, and John Smith had insurance with State Farm, I could sue, and the name would be Joe Bob versus John Smith and State Farm Insurance Company. So the jury would know that the defendant, John Smith, was insured by State Farm and so forth. Well, the legislature, due to the urging of insurance companies, decided, wait a second, that may inflate jury verdicts, because if a juror knows absolutely there's insurance, they're apt to get more money. So what we now have is kind of a cloaking device, more or less, because I can sue a regular person who has plenty of insurance with either State Farm, Allstate, Geico, Progressive, whoever, but I cannot mention them in the complaint. I cannot mention them in the courtroom. And if I were to accidentally blurt something out about the defendant's insurance in the middle of trial, or my client did, the judge would not only get irate, but the judge would call for a mistrial, throw the case out, and we had to come back several months later and retry the case all over again at a great amount of expense. And the judge certainly would not be happy. So I have now, since 1981.
Looks like the phone call dropped there. We will wait for Terrence Gross to give us a call back. Once again, the cities that they serve are Crestview, Milton, Navarre, Mary Esther, and Fort Walton Beach. 437-1620 if you have any questions for attorney Terrence Gross today on Pep Talk. 1 second. Okay, you are back on, sir.
Yeah, I got dropped. This happened last week as well. So what this leads to some kind of very negative results, because I have had a half a dozen cases since 1981 where jurors have question. Like, jurors are allowed, when they go to deliberate, to write notes to the judges. They write a note, it goes to the bailiff, and the judge unfolds it and reads it to the lawyers. And invariably, about a half a dozen times, I've had jurors ask, does the defendant, does John Smith, does he have insurance? They want to know, because maybe they're scared that if they give a reasonable verdict, which could be a big verdict, that poor John Smith's going to have to pay this thing, so they have more sympathy for the defendant than they do the injured party. And obviously, it's a real bad sign for a plaintiff's lawyer if all of a sudden the bailiff gives a piece of paper to the judge and he reads in the courtroom outside the presence of the jury, and he goes, the jury's asked this question, Mr. Gross and so-and-so. Does the defendant have insurance? And then they call the jury back in, and every judge has a script. It's a script, and the script pretty much says this. You have asked a question that is not part of this case. You should base your verdict on the law and the evidence and not worry about the basis of your question. So it's a no answer. So then the jury goes back to, well, judge didn't answer it, but I don't think there's insurance. Therefore, we better not give a big award because Mr. Gross could end up taking this guy's house or his IRA or something, bankrupting him. And they have some sympathy now for the defendant, even though this defendant is fully insured with hundreds of thousands of dollars of insurance. But the jury didn't know that. Nobody told them that. And they're probably thinking, well, Mr. Gross is a good lawyer. He certainly would have mentioned that. Mr. Gross never mentioned insurance. Therefore, there must not be any because Mr. Gross sounds competent. And little do they know, I'm not allowed to. And so it's called the non-joinder statute. And it was passed intentionally at the urging of insurance companies to keep verdicts down, to kind of mislead jurors. And I would tell you this before in this little statute discussion is I can assure you, if you're ever a juror and in the courtroom and some plaintiff has sued a defendant, you could bet your bottom dollar that there's insurance. Lawyers don't just sue people. You can't collect against the person. They can file bankrupt and whatever. It's just not done. We go after insurance companies. So if we're in the courtroom, the insurance company has paid for that lawyer to defend the person and will pay the verdict within their limits. So that's what people have to know. You'll never know it otherwise. And it's just something I presume that most of you are hearing for the first time. And I have many of my clients question. I just filed a lawsuit, and the father of the daughter, who's very educated, he's got a great job, questioned me, why didn't you mention insurance? You forgot to mention. No, I didn't forget, sir. I can't. And then I got to explain this whole thing to them, and then they look at me like I'm from Mars or something. But it's the law. Lawyers have to follow the law. Then there's something called the sovereign immunity statute, another statute that was passed years ago, decades ago, and it basically limits the liability of any sovereign, which could be a municipality, a governmental agency, it could be the school board, it could be the sheriff's department, Pensacola Police. I had one in Okaloosa County against a property appraiser, one of their appraisers was driving one of their cars and reared in my client that led to surgery. So you can sue, we're allowed to sue the sovereign, but it's not like a regular personal injury case because it used to have a 100,000 cap. No matter what the injuries were, the most you can get is 100. Now it's 200. There's a small exception saying, oh, you can have a claims bill, go before the legislature, and if they approve it, you can get more, but I would tell you what you'd have to do on a case is go to court knowing there's a 200 cap, spend all the time and expense of getting a jury verdict, which may be appealed, may not be appealed. Then you make a claims bill. Usually you have to get your local representative to almost sponsor like a bill during the legislative session when they're voting on everything. The last thing these legislators want to do is claims bills. Trust me. They're voting about schools, allocations for roadways, and trying to make a budget. And the last thing they want to do is blow up a budget, paying some poor individual a couple million dollars for an injury they received due to the negligence of maybe a cop or a school bus driver or something like that. So I'd say over 90% of the claims bills do not come to fruition, and you're just left at the mercy of this $200,000 cap, which with extreme injuries is very, very unfair. But that's been the law since I've been a lawyer. Like I said, it used to be 100, now it's 200. They tried to make it 300, truthfully, this last legislative session. It just never passed. It just passed muster. So these laws that people just don't think about, probably one of the most draconian statutes I get involved in is the Wrongful Death Act. And it is very unfair, leads to very awkward, unfair results. And who is penalized? It's the injured party. And the injured party that's injured worse. But so there's many traps and nuances of the Wrongful Death Statute. In fact, what I do is if I know family members are coming in for an interview with me on the wrongful death of their loved one, I make copies of the wrongful death statute just to show them the statute, read the words, explain it, because people, again, if I start telling them about what they can and cannot do, they're looking at me, oh, maybe we got the wrong lawyer. I mean, this lawyer doesn't sound very good, Pete. He's saying we can't do this, we can't do that. We lost our loved one. This has to be a multi-million-dollar case. Well, let me explain this to you. And the nuances are very, very deliberate. So the one strange thing about the Wrongful Death Act that makes it different than any other statute that I know of under Florida law is it defines minor as anyone under 25 years of age as opposed to 18. So, and the distinction could be, the best example I can give.
Oh, looks like we lost him once again. You're listening to Attorney Terrence Gross from Gross & Schuster on Pep Talk today. GrossAndSchuster.com is the website. If you're looking for a free consultation, 850-990-2577. All right, sir, you were talking about the best example you can provide.
Thank you. The best example I could provide is there was a very successful businessman. This is over 30 years ago. It could have been 40. It's a long time ago. And what happened was he was on Interstate 10. A drunken driver with no insurance was coming in the opposite direction, going the wrong way on the interstate, in other words, and hit him head on and killed this gentleman. So he was divorced and he just married a new young lady. So that was his wife. And he had four children. And I remember this like it was yesterday. He had three girls. And I believe they were at that time, you know, kind of late 20s, early 30s, really close to her dad, perfect daughters, doting, you know, celebrating Father's Day and birthdays and family events and doing everything appropriate, just a great relationship with her dad. And they were just, you know, just mournful of their loss of their father. Meanwhile, he had a 24-year-old. Wayward son, you know, a kid in and out of rehab and just the black sheep of the family and so forth. And the family came and approached me about interviewing about what could be done with this case. And I had to explain, well, first of all, unfortunately, since he's married, his new wife, even though they've only been married a year, is certainly a survivor by the law because it's his wife. As a result adult children cannot make a pain and suffering mental anguish claim. So even as close as these daughters were, they were forbidden by statute from making a claim for pain and suffering, mental anguish, and all that. But meanwhile, the 24-year-old son, since he was a minor under that statute, could make a claim, even though his relationship with his dad was pretty bad. And they were just stupefied. I mean, you look at these people and you're trying, and I felt so sorry for them. First, they lost their father, then they're getting totally screwed by the statute. But that's the statute, and it just leads to very unfair consequences. Parents of a minor child can make a claim for pain and suffering if they lose a 24-year-old child. Parents of a 26-year-old child that's married cannot. I mean, that's why I always Xerox this statute and highlight it. And I go over with these people because it's there. It's in black and white. It's not a long statute, but the provisions are just horrific that limit damages. And I'm going to give you the worst example I can give you. We're going to go back to 1995. I know it was 1995 because it was Hurricane Opal. And at that time, there was a multimillionaire that was racing down from Atlanta to get his million-dollar boat to trailer back to get it out of harm's way from Hurricane Opal. And by the time he picked up the boat and his trailer in the boat, the winds had really picked up, and the storm was hitting, and he's trying to race out of Pensacola to get out of harm's way. And we all know that during hurricanes, when lights go out at intersections, the rule of law is that you treat that intersection as a four-way stop. So there was this car that had three 80-year-old people in it, and they came to this intersection where the lights were out. They stopped, waited, looked both ways, and pulled out. Meanwhile, this guy with the boat, the trailer, raced through the intersection at a high speed, never stopped, blasted these people, killed all three instantaneously, and this guy pulling the boat had $6 million in insurance. So the people and the family, end up coming to me, and now we got to take a look at this wrongful death statute and take a look. So the first thing I want to point out is of the three people, there was a man and a woman, all in their 80s. They were newlyweds. Two of these people were newlyweds, had never married before. They got married in their late 70s or early 80s, and neither had children. They both were retired. They were not wealthy. They had no assets. We found out later with a lot of work that the man had a distant nephew living in South America that pretty much didn't want to have anything to do with the case or anything. So they're dead. This guy caused the accident, millions of insurance. They're dead. Obviously, everybody's thinking this is a seven-figure case. How can you lose this case? Well, the law says you got to have a survivor, someone to bring the pain and suffering claim. There was nobody. There was no survivor. Even the distant nephew was not a survivor by statute. So they really had no pain and suffering case. They died, but there was nobody to survive them of any sort. And to complicate matters, you're allowed to also make a claim for loss of net accumulations. Well, they're retired in Social Security. They only had several thousand dollars in their checking account. That's all they had. They lived in an apartment. They had an old junker car. So both their Social Security checks pretty much paid their expenses, and that was that. And they didn't even have that claim. So the case actually ended up being settled for peanuts, to my chagrin, but that was the law. Meanwhile, the other lady was a widow, had four children, and each of those adult children were allowed to make a claim because she wasn't married. So by that statute, they can make a claim. And then the claim, usually the jury instruction says you're allowed to have compensation for the rest of, you know, their lifespan, for the lifespan of the person that died. Well, she was 88 years old at the time of her death. How much longer was she going to live is the problem. The mortality tables say the average white female lives to 81 in America. This lady was 88. And so, again, what were the future damages? So they're, you know, did obviously settle the case for well in the six figures, but it wasn't multi-millions because she had no loss accumulations either. And then you got to look into the lifespan. So really horrific results, but that was what the statute showed. So I see that we're quickly running out of time, and I give you.
Oh, looks like we dropped him with about 2 minutes to go. Hopefully he gives us a call back. But you're listening to Attorney Terrence Gross on Pep Talk, 437-1620, if you have any questions for him. And there he is. Okay, you're back, sir, and you have about a minute 30 yet.
Okay. Yeah, so many instances of statutes passed by the legislature that have limited what lawyers like me can do. Sometimes I feel like I have one arm tied behind my back, but we do the best we can. Me and my sons are personal injury lawyers. We're proud to represent people, but we have to follow the law. We have to, you know, look at these statutes and see how we could kind of wiggle around them if we can. If you wish to consult with us, call 850-434-3333 or visit us on our website at grossandschuster.com. And we like meeting people. Our office is right there at Palo Fox and Cervantes. It's the old Board of Health building built in 1915. It's really a historical building for Pensacola. If you want to come by and even see it, we welcome people who just want to put their head in the door and wonder what it looks like inside. But anyway, thanks for the opportunity. I'll be back in the next week or two.
Okay. And you have you started this firm back when? What year?
1981.
So you've been in practice for lots of years. And so tell me a little bit about the areas of practice that you cover for people that may not
just
know.
Pretty personal injury, mainly car wrecks, some slip falls, some dog bites, but 90% of what we do are car wrecks.
Okay. And one more time, if people want to get a hold of you.
850-434-3333. Or visit us on the web at grossandschuster.com.
Attorney Terrence Gross, thank you for being with us today.